So today we're going to be talking about living in a hybrid world, really, and trying to bring together this concept of the governance and compliance concerns that you guys have within your organizations. And we're telling a few stories around there. So I'm just going to jump in and introduce myself, and then I'll hand the reins to Dana as well. So my name is Jeremy Thake. I'm a SharePoint MVP, and I'm a chief architect at AvePoint, based out of our New Jersey offices. So I was waiting around in the boat a few weeks ago when the hurricane came through. Obviously, I'm not from New York or New Jersey. I'm actually from London originally. I did have a stint in Australia for 8 years in Perth, so a little bit of a twang there. And now, obviously, I live very close to Times Square. I run a website with Mark Miller called nothingbutsharepoint.com, which is a community site, which I encourage you guys to check out. We try and take a non-Microsoft kind of abstract view of things to give you a good balanced story there. And I also kicked off with a few other guys in the room, AvePoint Labs, which is our research and development component of our company. And you'll notice there's a few Surface devices on display in our booth, and that's because we've built Windows 8 apps already with SharePoint reporting data. So if you're interested in those kind of things and you're looking at what Windows 8 can do for your organization, please come by and have a look at that booth. I should be at the booth for the rest of the day as well, so I can happily walk you through that.
Great. Thanks, Jeremy. So I'm Dana Simrikoff, and let me see here. How do I progress this forward? Just click.
No, turn it off.
No, I'm just trying to move it.
That one.
Got it. Okay. So unlike Jeremy, I'm originally from New York, and unlike probably most of the people that have been talking with you at the conference this week, I'm a lawyer, so don't hold that against me. And I'm responsible for our practice at AvePoint that helps customers understand risk within their SharePoint environments and outside of their SharePoint environments as well. You can see from the picture that I moved from New York to New Hampshire, and I'm hoping that I won't be going home to snow, but if I am, that's okay. And part of our session today, we'll be talking about the intersection of compliance and governance and the cloud in particular, because one of the concerns that we hear from customers, rightly or wrongly, around their cloud strategies is a concern about moving private data or sensitive information to the cloud. So hopefully we'll give you some ideas about how to put solutions in place and strategies in place to allay those concerns. So I'm going to turn it back to Jeremy now to review our agenda.
Sure. So we're going to talk a little bit about introducing this concept of governance. And there have been quite a few sessions this week about governance, but this is really introducing it from our perspective of talking to all of our customers and understanding what is really important to them from this governance concern. We know the word is very heavily overused, so we want to frame it in the way that we talk about it with our customers to kind of set the scene for this session. Then Dana's going to talk about compliance, risk, and privacy from that exact same point as well, what we think compliance and risk and privacy is about. And then what we're going to do is add a little bit more flavor in there about the deployment opportunities with the cloud. For any of you that were in the keynote on Monday, you would have noticed that the word cloud was used quite heavily, much like it was in 2011 as well. But more surprisingly with the keynote on Monday was the word on-premise was actually only ever used once in the entire two-hour session. So we're going to put a bit more reality around this cloud and how that works for you guys. And then we're going to tie that all back in again by saying, well, how do we actually provide this kind of offering transparently to the business users based on those things we've talked about? So hopefully by the end of the session, you'll have a good understanding about the three key concepts there, and then we're going to try and tie those together to show you how you can deliver those things to your organizations. So to jump straight in there, we're going to start talking about governance. One of the things that we kind of raise with a lot of organizations is that SharePoint gets pushed in from a very IT pro perspective. And for those of you that do kind of follow the analysts, Gartner came up with a very interesting stat where essentially said that he reckons in most regulated industries that 20% of those CIOs would lose their jobs based on the fact that if they're not focusing and implementing a successful information governance plan. So the analysts at Gartner, and we speak to them regularly, have really highlighted these concerns that there seems to be a lot of focus on technology, but there isn't that focus on the actual the implementation of that technology within the business and enforcing the governance plans and policies and the compliance, risk, and privacy policies are adhered to. So a little bit of a scary stat, but just putting out there, these are analysts. They do like to kind of make broad statements, but this is something we just want to make sure you're aware of if you are a CIO sitting in your chair right now. So what is SharePoint governance? Well, Microsoft have a very good definition of governance on TechNet and MSDN. The only issue I find with the TechNet MSDN perspective is they talk about this from a perspective of, you know, guiding and driving your organization and putting in that control in place that the business users have to adhere to. But then when you start digging into the details of TechNet and MSDN, it's very, very technical content. There isn't much business content out there to really help you from that, the softer side of presenting SharePoint as a service to your organization. So what we're going to try and do today is try and soften it up a little bit to take away some of those technical hard edges and allow you to understand this more from a business perspective. So governance is not a new thing. For those of you who have been in SharePoint for a while and maybe seen the way that people can't start presenting and communicating governance, governance has been around for a long time. I think what we see in the industry, though, is that people read it from a very SharePoint governance perspective, and they don't understand how that ties back into some of the overarching governance controls there. So corporate governance will always be in place within any organization, and there may be different levels of focus there within your organization on how well each department within the organization aligns back up to that corporate governance, whether it's your corporate goals and objectives at that very, very high level. Now, typically, your IT manager or your CIO, depending on the scale of your company, will actually align his IT governance plan for all of IT back up to those corporate goals, because that's how he gets that executive sponsorship, that buy-in on the systems he has to implement and how he drives his budget and his investment year on year. And then as a SharePoint owner, and usually it's a group of people that own SharePoint for various reasons we'll cover later, they should have a SharePoint governance plan that lines up with their IT governance plan, which therefore aligns directly with that corporate governance plan. But what we see in a lot of organizations we talk to is they stay very myopic on the SharePoint governance plan without that alignment back up the chain. And what that means is when you start looking for executive sponsorship within your organization, you start to lose that kind of investment and the people coming and helping you from that champion perspective to make your system successful. And this is nothing new. SAP, Lotus Notes have all had these system governance plans in place for a long time. And so really you should be reaching out to other people within your organization to see what other system governance looks like and seeing how they're successful within your organization with their system governance plans. Now, one thing I always get asked is, you know, how much governance should we have? We see lots of different workloads in SharePoint. You would have seen in the keynote there was a big focus on the social workload this time around. The collaboration workload and the document management workload of SharePoint has always been a key kind of core feature of SharePoint and one of those things that always gets implemented pretty much first within a SharePoint deployment in most organizations. Sometimes it will compete with other enterprise content management systems. One of the things we tend to recommend is that really it's about that reach. So if you have an intranet or a portal, depending on the name and the nomenclature you use, and that reach is organization-wide, then there's a lot of risk there that if there's anything that isn't compliant to what you've agreed on from a governance and policy perspective, that you should be putting in place a lot more governance to make sure that, the risk is a lot lower. Whereas things like your My Sites, things like individual team sites, technically, there'll be less risk because there's not as much visibility or reach within your organization to those particular workloads. Now, this isn't a hard and fast rule because although you can introduce governance in that way, sometimes there can be small project sites that are very, very business critical and very, very important to the organization, and those will need high governance as well. So it's not a hard and fast rule, but traditionally what we see is there's a lot more focus around governance with those highly visible, highly reached workloads than there is the smaller workloads inside the organization. And I think the key that we get is when we first started talking about SharePoint governance with our customers, a lot of the time it was IT administrators or SharePoint architects that were, we need to do governance. Where in 2009 that was definitely the case. In 2011 at the conference, we started to see more business owners come and ask us about doing SharePoint governance. And this year it's been really refreshing to see a lot more business people coming and asking us about SharePoint governance. And IT starting to take a bit of a back seat. The reason I'm happy about this is because what this means is that rather than IT trying to drive SharePoint governance from an IT perspective hat and drive it because they want to control it and put lots of constraint around it and really kind of make sure they've got everything under control from their own perspective, is that the business start driving SharePoint governance on how they want to use this system. So this balancing act is very, very hard, and it's very important that you make sure you have the right stakeholders involved in this process of SharePoint governance to ensure you get that nice balance. We have seen some customers where the balance is too high on the business, and the IT are frustrated because they're not being able to control their aspects of SharePoint. So there is a hard balance there. It's very important that you introduce those people and make sure they're working together as a team to have a successful governance plan within SharePoint. When we defined governance 2 or 3 years ago, you know, there was a lot of people in the community and Microsoft and the ecosystem that were kind of talking about it in different ways. What we've decided to do is kind of put it into 4 kind of buckets of what the components are that drive governance. That first bucket is the people, which we'll talk about in a second. The people that get involved in defining that SharePoint governance. And then once those people have defined those policies that are agreed on, setting that expectation around the business and IT. And we'll talk about what some of those examples of those expectations are in a moment. And once those expectations have been set and those policies have been defined, we then put a process in place to enforce those policies. One of the things that we've seen in a lot of organizations is that they will define a policy, such as you may not have more than 10,000 documents in the list due to discoverability issues. That's a very odd rule in itself, but the question I asked that customer was, why did you do that? Well, we've had complaints that we can't find information in these lists and search isn't working for us and we wanted a better information architecture. And so I said, well, you've put that policy in place. It's going to be very, very hard to enforce that. Do you have any tests? Do you run any scripts to report this type of policy? And they're like, no, we just entrust that these people do the right thing by this policy. So what I recommend is that if you're going to enforce or if you're going to put in place a policy, that you have some mechanism, some process to enforce those policies that you've agreed on between IT and the business. And sometimes, and more likely as you grow and scale with SharePoint, you're going to have to use some form of technology there rather than human manual process to do that because you won't be able to scale as you grow out those individual policies within your workload. So from a people perspective, as we said, a few years ago, IT were the ones that were really owning this and looking after SharePoint governance. So it was the architects, the admins, and maybe the site collection owners. But what we've seen over time now is they've been reaching out to those business owners, whether it be the workload owners, so maybe the business unit that owns the intranet, or the information records management team that own the document management, record management workload within SharePoint. Or maybe there's an internet-facing website. Getting those people involved who own that and having those discussions with the IT is very, very important. And if your company is functionally driven, obviously then you want to get those guys involved and maybe pick individual champions within each department with enough seniority that you can get that sway to make sure that this is supported within your organization. And then thirdly, you really should get that back office involved as soon as you can, whether it be the finance team, the legal team, the HR team, or even the corporate communications. What we see a lot when we talk to our customers is that these guys get involved with the SharePoint governance plan reactively. So as they discover that you're putting all these very private personal information documents inside SharePoint and the records managers find out, they'll come running to you and be saying, you shouldn't be doing this. This is against our policy. So it's very, very important that you include these back office people early on in the space, so they understand what you're trying to achieve with SharePoint and therefore enforcing that and aligning with their needs as well as your needs. And then lastly, the line at the bottom there is around executive sponsorship. A successful SharePoint governance plan and the successful SharePoint service to your organization requires that sponsorship. It requires that buy-in. I can't stress enough how important it is to have someone extremely high up in your organization who has sucked in the SharePoint Kool-Aid, understands exactly what SharePoint's going to do for your organization, and is there to support you when you're defining these SharePoint governance plans and trying to push them into your organization and helping the business to realize what that expectation and the rules of the road are. Now, as we said before, IT tend to drive this historically. And what IT focus on from a SharePoint governance perspective is more around administration and operations and infrastructure. So they focus on the service level agreements of SharePoint. If SharePoint goes down, what's the policy around us being able to restore the entire SharePoint file? Or what's the page load of an individual page going to be as a maximum page time within the organization? Or what is the storage quotas of each site with each department within the organization? It's very around focused on how it's important to them and what impact it's going to have on them if they don't set those expectations. What we find that comes out from a reactive perspective is the information architecture. So as you decide to deploy the intranet workload and you start talking about how many site collections, how many sites, what security you're going to have, are we going to use content types, those information architecture questions will come out by osmosis and drive your security. But it's important that you think about these things for every single workload within SharePoint, rather than reacting to them as your site grows too far and maybe start to feel the pressure of this system not working within the organization. And then Dana's going to talk about this in a lot more detail, but what do you see here, Dana, from an information management perspective?
Well, I think it's really important for organizations to understand the kind of information that is within their SharePoint sites, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but many of the companies that we work with have a policy that says you can't put sensitive data inside of SharePoint, or we don't allow HIPAA-protected data inside of SharePoint. The first question I ask them is, well, how do you know if it's there? And the normal response is, well, we have no idea if it's there or not. This is our policy. So we'll talk a little bit more about that coming up.
But. Yeah. So and again, that's a reactive thing. It seems to be that once they find there's an issue with those documents within SharePoint, that they start running around and suddenly SharePoint's important and on their radar. So we encourage you guys that you get involved a lot earlier on in this and make sure you go find those people that you know are looking after this corporate-wide. And then with the project management aspects of looking at policy, one of the other things that we find is that often it's a water cooler discussion or it's done via email that someone needs a new workload introduced into SharePoint. What we try and recommend with customers is that they define a policy of the approach, the process, to have that conversation around, I would like this new workload to be introduced to SharePoint. Maybe I've been to this conference and I've seen the business intelligence features of SharePoint. I would like to switch that on for our department. You really need to define from a project management perspective how that process happens. And this is all part of a good governance plan within the organization. It's steering the business to get the most out of SharePoint, but unless they know where they can see information on how they can switch these things on, it becomes very, very hard in the organization, and you don't get an adoption that you would see if you had that in place. And this is where the leadership comes in. Not everyone at your company consuming SharePoint is at this conference. Not everyone at your company is going to read your blogs and listen to your recommendations that you should check out this session recording when you get back to the office. You guys are the leaders of your organization, and you're the guys that have to evangelize SharePoint. You have to evangelize that technology, those workloads, and try and introduce them into the organization. And it's good and it's key that you have to understand what leadership is around and to try and pick those people that are super enthusiastic, have influence within the organization to make this successful and to drive that those policies are enforced from a communications perspective. And then when we start talking about customizations, for anyone that saw there's been SBYAM, which is the Yammer Open Community Group, where there was a lot of discussion around some comments made by some of the senior guys in the office and SharePoint teams around customization levels within SharePoint. Now, obviously, the new app model is moving everything outside of SharePoint to try and not affect the performance, stability, the upgradability of SharePoint. But the reality is that most organizations will still start to bend and crack and change SharePoint in ways that, one, it probably shouldn't have been asked to be bent in the first place, but two, if it has been bent, the person that originally bent SharePoint to do something that a business user asked may not be there forever. So it's very important from a customization perspective to define what can and can't be done. Should we allow users to use SharePoint Designer within their organization? Should they have site collection admin rights to a site collection just because they're accountable for that site collection? Or should they just be put in the site owners group and have full control? Maybe they need training before they can do customizations. Those policies should be defined to set that expectation up front, rather than kind of people going and asking, oh, I need to use SharePoint Designer. Oh, no problem. Just go ahead. Go break that site and come back to me in 2 weeks when you need some help. Those kind of things should be confirmed up front. And then from an adoption perspective, I think this is one real lesson that we learned even internally. was we measure adoption. We measure the success of SharePoint in different ways. And sometimes we've had some really nice ideas about how we can measure adoption from 6 months in the past to current day. But we don't have the metrics. We don't have the logs. We don't switch on the audit data for certain sites. So we can't see how much adoption we are getting within the organization. So what I would recommend is when you're defining, okay, in a year's time, how are we going to measure the success of what we've done, please make sure that you've switched on all those logs and all those audit records so that you can capture that information to prove, look, we started off with only 100 users in this workload, and now we've got 10,000 in the last year, 2 years. Unless you have that data and you're retaining that data, it's very, very hard to prove the success of the adoption of your organization. And with all things in the system, we need to focus on continuous improvement. So, Dana, what have you seen in there? What have you seen outside inside that perspective?
Well, I think that one of the things that's important to think about is that that which is not measured can't be improved, right? So just per my earlier comment, saying that you have a policy but then not being able to measure it or enforce it is not a very effective strategy. And so the more that you can actually provide metrics around success or failure, the more likely you are to be able to improve not only your SharePoint performance and adoption and all the things that Jeremy is talking about, but also improve your compliance posture as well.
Yep. And so we touched on this a little bit. Really, when you have that policy in place, and enforcement is a strong word, but the reality is that whether you say it complies, it enforces, you're trying to govern it, you're trying to control it, there is some way you've got to do that. And typically we see organizations starting by doing this manually or encouraging you to do this. And the reality is that that works on a small scale, but as the company grows, it starts to really hurt. And often you get human error in that enforcement as well, where things slip through the pipes because you haven't caught absolutely everything going on in that system, especially from a privacy perspective. So what we see organizations start to do is they introduce either PowerShell scripts or some custom code to actually try and check these things. So in the example we used earlier on with the number of documents in a list. Or they start looking at third-party products. And then the more mature or large organizations with lots of workloads start to build custom applications. They start to build individual applications to kind of shrink wrap and constrain what people can do within SharePoint by making them go through the app to do the things they need to do in SharePoint. Or they look at third-party apps that do a similar thing. So as an example of that, there's various different ways you can build applications in SharePoint, whether it's a SharePoint list, whether you start looking at InfoPath to do forms, or whether you do full true custom development. And each of these things has a very different timeline of implementation and a very different skill set, whether it's a standard SharePoint developer or whether it's a true .NET developer. And the key point with this slide is that if you do this for every single policy that you've been trying to enforce, this is going to take a lot of time and a lot of consideration to do. And obviously, there's operational and maintenance things around all these different systems. And we'll talk more about this as, in the future. So we touched on information management, Dana. What have you been seeing from a kind of a privacy and risk perspective around the information management side of things?
Well, I think one of the challenges that we see for customers, not only in SharePoint, but really across their IT systems, again, goes back to the point we made earlier, which is that you need to have a methodology of measuring where you're doing well and where you're not. And one of the big disconnects that we see is really comes from the audience that you're speaking to. And so to sort of get started now in moving the conversation toward compliance and risk and privacy, let me just ask, by a show of hands, how many of you folks in the audience would consider yourselves to be IT, SharePoint administrators, SharePoint users, working on sort of the, okay. How many of you folks in the audience would consider yourselves to be more on the policy side, chief information security officers, privacy officers, any of those kinds of, no hands, okay. Oh, one hand, two hands, okay. So a couple of folks. So of the IT folks in the room, how many of you speak regularly with your chief privacy officer or chief information security officers about your plans around SharePoint and the kinds of information that you're managing within it? Okay, just a handful, right? And I'll tell you why that is, at least in my experience, and that's sort of that everybody, you know, from the policy side of the house, and the IT side of the house, and the business, everybody's talking a little bit of a different language. And I sort of get that because I'm a lawyer working for an IT company, right? And so that puts me in a little bit of a unique situation. But it is a different kind of conversation, right? When you're talking about kinds of things that we've been discussing to date around governing your IT environment, that's a very different conversation than talking about whether you're in compliance with a particular regulatory framework, right? And so lawyers sort of speak, lawyers speak. And that's not always a very fluid conversation with IT administrators and the compliance folks in the house. So let's briefly just get some definitions out of the way. And Jeremy put up a really nice definition, I think, of governance. Risk is something that's really hard to measure. I think of those Allstate commercials, the Mayhem Men, right? I don't know if you guys have seen those, depending on where you are. I think they run pretty broadly. But to me, from the perspective of a lawyer, SharePoint sort of is that mayhem, right? And particularly when you don't have control of your SharePoint environment, it's like the guy running down the street with a pink bandana, distracting the driver, right? Users make mistakes all the time, right? If you don't have controls in place to prevent that from happening, that can be risk. Compliance, on the other hand, has a very broad definition that means a lot of different things. The way that we're talking about it today, we're really saying that compliance means that if you have a requirement, whether that's an external requirement like a law that says you have to do this or you have to do that, or maybe an internal requirement that's a policy of your company, then that's compliance too, making sure that the steps you take and the actions that you put in place are going to ensure that you are in compliance with that particular statutory, regulatory, or company-specific policy. So for today's discussion, to frame it in even a little bit further, when we're talking about compliance in this context, we're talking about making information available to the people that should have it and protected from the people who shouldn't have it. And that's pretty simple, right? I think that's something that lawyers understand. That's something that everybody on the street understands. And now we want to talk about how to take that simple concept and make it work inside of a SharePoint environment, which is not easy to do, by the way. Maybe simple to talk about, not so easy to do. Okay, so what kinds of information are we talking about? It can vary depending on the kind of business that you're in, but we may be talking about intellectual property or trade secrets. We may be talking about customer data. Depending on what you're using SharePoint to do or for, there may be discussions about customer information that should be protected. We may be talking about collaborations on strategy. Maybe you're working on something that an emerging technology market or some research that's confidential and shouldn't be disclosed. Maybe personal information of your employees on their My Sites, in their HR files, a whole cacophony of different kinds of things. It may be, again, legal issues, information that you need to hold in place in case of a litigation or e-discovery requirement that your business may have. And again, at the simplest level, it's information that should not be exposed to people that shouldn't see it. Now, I purposely put this slide up here just to have that little sort of lawyer fear, right? To say there's all kinds of stuff out there that the executives in your business need to be worried about. And just to put it in perspective, if you haven't followed this in the news, privacy is becoming increasingly an area of great concern. Around the world, really, whether that's personal privacy through issues like identity theft, privacy on systems like Facebook and Twitter, where there's been a lot of sort of concerns around privacy policies and what companies are doing with consumer information, and even in some countries, criminal sanctions for executives that do the wrong thing or don't take proper steps to protect customer information or employee information. So the consequences for not being in compliance can be pretty severe depending on what the problem is that you've created. But again, all of these regulatory frameworks, no matter how different they are, have these same common principles that we've talked about. Make sure that whatever you manage inside or outside of your SharePoint environment is in the right hands, right? That the people that should have access to it have access to it, and the people that shouldn't don't. And if you do that, you're in good shape, all right? And so to go back to a point that Jeremy made earlier about the keynote, session in which the CEO or the executives from Yammer were talking about the integration of Yammer and SharePoint 2013, about being a great step forward in terms of collaboration and making information available where previously there had been a lot of information silos within businesses. And now this information and conversations could take place across an entire business. Of course, I sat in the audience thinking, okay, I think that's kind of cool, but I can see some problems here. And when they went a step further and said that that water cooler conversation that took place in your business traditionally between a few people was now available to the enterprise, I said, okay, that's a problem, right? Because what if the information that was in those silos was supposed to be in a silo? Or what if the conversations that were just happening between a couple of people were about protected information? And I'm not sure how many of you guys have been in those water cooler conversations, but I can tell you for sure that for the most part, HR isn't going to want those blasted to the entire organization. So we're talking about a balance, right? We're talking about a balance in innovation and the sort of culture that we're in today where everybody needs access to everything right away. And that's certainly a very attractive business driver. I haven't talked to a single executive at a company that doesn't want to be on the bleeding edge of technology and sort of have all the cool stuff that's out there. But on the other hand, the risk managers in these businesses that are very influential are also going to have some concerns around this realistically. And so, and this is no sort of, you know, I'm not sort of putting this up here to rub any salt in any wounds, right? But you never know which raindrop it is that's going to cause the catastrophe. And my point here really is that everybody sort of operates from a it's all about me world, because that's the human nature, right? Which is that we think to ourselves, well, it's just me. I'm just going to do it this one time. I'm in a hurry and I need to send this document to somebody. I know I'm supposed to do it this one particular way, but nothing bad is going to happen. I have to just get it out quickly and no big deal, right? But that can be a really big deal if it's the wrong person sending the wrong thing at the wrong time, or if everybody thinks that it's not just them and not everybody else, you can get into a pretty bad situation pretty quickly. So what's interesting to me about this is that when we talk about security and compliance inside and outside of SharePoint, but in IT systems, the traditional way of thinking about compliance and security says that we need to protect our systems from hackers. We think about bad actors, we think about cybersecurity threats, we think about somebody coming in and trying to take our systems down, denial of service attacks, again, threats coming from the outside, or that malicious employee that goes out with a grudge and wants to either steal something from the business or do something bad. But statistically, when you look at the cause of most privacy breaches within organizations, you'd kind of be surprised to see that most of them, in fact, the vast majority of them, come from an employee making a mistake. Now that's a really big deal, right? Because how many of you, and I'm going to raise my hand, accidentally put something in a public folder versus a private folder, or click the wrong button in SharePoint, or just make a mistake, which happens all the time. I'll tell you, maybe it happens more to me because, again, I'm a lawyer and not an IT person, but guaranteed most of the users in your SharePoint environment are not IT people, and they make those mistakes all the time. Well, the great news about this statistic is this is very easy to fix. All right, this is something that you can really do a lot to prevent, and if you do so, you can see that you reduce your likelihood of getting into compliance trouble greatly. So that's the good news. Now, specifically, a couple of things to think about. You want to think about, again, confidentiality leaks, which we've been talking about a lot. Also, though, loss of data integrity, and I think, Jeremy, this ties back to the governance discussion we were having earlier, because governance can help make sure that you have the latest version of the information that you should have as well, right? Small steps like turning on versioning in SharePoint ensures that everybody's working off of the latest version of a document and that you don't have replication of a lot of documents across your environment, right?
Yeah, and to the point we said earlier on about the site collection administrator being kind of generally given because they're accountable for those site collections, those people make mistakes too, and if they haven't had the training or they don't understand SharePoint, they're more likely to make those mistakes, which makes that risk higher. So it's very important to make sure that you are giving out those controls to the right people within the organization.
Absolutely. And then access can be problematic either way, right? So access can mean many different things. It may mean accessibility, like as in Section 508 or W3C accessibility, which says that your systems have to be available to people with disabilities. It could be access in terms of, again, somebody having access that they shouldn't have because they either have permissions to information or parts of a SharePoint site that they shouldn't, or people are sharing documents that they shouldn't. Or it could be the other way around, where you can't get to something that you should get to, and that's a problem too. So some questions to ask when you're designing your compliance policy include things like, how do we prevent people from getting that data that they shouldn't have? How do we protect that most important data in our organizations? How do we reduce risk? These are sort of general questions, but you know, how quickly can we find information that we should find and prevent it from being found if it shouldn't be found? And how do we prepare for litigation and e-discovery? I think Microsoft has actually made some really nice steps in that space as well with the e-discovery improvements in SharePoint 2013. How do we ensure policy consistency, not only within our SharePoint environment, but across all of our IT systems so that people don't have to learn different things for different systems that they're using? You want to keep it simple, right? Make it easier for people to do the right thing than to do the wrong thing. How do we scale whatever we're doing for compliance to the enterprise so that we don't have to, again, learn different systems across the board? And how do we control costs, right? That's a really big deal too. One thing that I'll tell you that I think is, again, really good news, and I hope you take away from this, is that the only part for most of our customers, the only parts of the budget that we see increasing are in the area of security, right? Where we know that IT budgets across the board are decreasing and IT managers are being asked to do more with less. Security budgets, on the other hand, are increasing because this is a top concern. So when you think about how many conversations you've had with your security officer, it might be time to kind of rethink that, right? Because typically, security officers have not been a friend to SharePoint. I'll tell you that right now. I talk with security officers all the time, and they do not think about SharePoint in a very positive way. They see SharePoint as being risky, but most of that is perception. So if you can change that perception, and in fact, talk to the security officers, talk to your privacy officers, and make them stakeholders in your IT projects, that's also another source of potential funding for your advancements as well. So I say you should go back to your businesses and say, you know, SharePoint 2013 gives us some opportunities to make improvements in our security posture, and I guarantee you that you will have a very positive reception toward that. And then all of this, we'll talk about this a little bit more, Jeremy, in a few minutes, ties to what about the cloud? Because again, as scary as SharePoint is to security officers, the cloud is scarier. So this is a good, you know, thing to think about proactively in terms of how are you going to influence your company in making decisions about what to do and what not to do. Okay. So this is something that I think is really interesting. Most of us, again, have some sort of misperceptions about risk and what it means to our business. And if you remember one thing from this session, I want you to remember that risk is not just what you anticipate. Sometimes it's what you don't anticipate. And this quote, which actually came from the captain of the Titanic, is something that I think could probably be used to describe SharePoint pretty well, right? The most formidable and most advanced technology of its time. I could have actually seen, you know, one of the keynote speakers saying, wow, look at all that SharePoint has. And you know what? That's true. And the Titanic was the most foremost technology of its time. And yet, things didn't end well. Right? We know that. So, you know, remember the iceberg and think about that when you're thinking about your systems. They can be the best systems on the market now and, you know, forever. But if you don't have plans for that unanticipated risk, then you may be in jeopardy. All right? SharePoint, as we know, sometimes gets deployed under the radar screen of compliance officers. I see that happen all the time. I spend my days talking to these privacy officers and security officers, and I ask them, so what's your strategy around SharePoint? And from privacy officers in particular, I get one of two answers typically. They either say, well, I actually don't have time to look at SharePoint because my team is relatively small and we just don't have the bandwidth to look at it, because we know if we do look at it, there's going to be all kinds of information in there that shouldn't be in there. Or they'll say, this is the other answer that I typically get, well, we have a policy, and our policy says you can't put protected or controlled or sensitive data inside of SharePoint, so we're all set. All right? How many of you have heard that? I've heard it, okay? So I'm going to tell you what my answer is for those two separate stances. The second stance is the easy one. I say, well, great, you have a policy, so how do you know if people are complying with it? And my response generally is to say, well, if I have a policy in my house that says teenagers have to be home by 10 o'clock at night, and then I go away for the weekend, how do I know if they're coming home? Maybe they are, maybe they're not. If I don't have some way to check and know what they're doing, then they're going to do whatever they want. On the other hand, if it's the first answer, which is, I can't look at it, I'm too busy, I don't have time, then I say to them, not knowing is not better. Okay, it's never better not to know than it is to know. Because if you know from that sort of slide earlier about all of those statutes and all of those requirements that you have on your company, you are always in a better position if you take proactive steps to prevent something bad from happening. And I will tell you that there is no fully secure system out there other than one that is turned off. Okay? Anybody that's worked in the security space knows that, and even sometimes systems that are turned off can be turned on. All right? So, you're never going to have a perfectly secure system, but if you have taken proactive steps to prevent something bad from happening, and you can react quickly if it does, then you're a far better position legally in terms of any kind of fine or consequence you may have to a breach than you would be by completely ignoring it. So not knowing is not better. SharePoint is, I think, misunderstood often by compliance officers and even sometimes by the business in terms of what the capabilities are and what can be achieved. And while it may be broadly adopted, it often is with little oversight for compliance, which is very much the same for governance, too. And yet I think that having a successful governance and compliance plan, strategy, and implementation is all the difference between success and failure of a SharePoint environment. So, really important to think about this, no matter whether you're that IT person or the security officer or the privacy officer. So, as Jeremy said earlier about balance, it is a balancing act. It's balancing access and security and understanding how those things work together. But really important too, I want to make sure that it's really clear that I don't think that software is a magic pill. I wish it was. I wish there was that sort of like magic pill for SharePoint compliance and you just took it and then you were done. Like everything else, it's about people, policy and process and technology, training, governance, oversight, and technical enforcement. Making sure that you can put a policy into place that is realistic and that your company can comply with, and then measuring whether that is working all the time. Because these things have to evolve as technology evolves. They cannot just be created, and this is something I see on the governance side all the time. Companies that invest heavily in pulling together a group of stakeholders to write this beautiful governance document that everybody agrees to, can take weeks, months, years to create this document, and then it lives in its lovely binder on a shelf, right? Consultants that come in and charge tremendous amounts of money sometimes to help a company build that governance policy, but if you can't implement it and measure it and enforce it, then all it is a pretty book sitting on your shelf. Just like that policy is unenforceable if it's not measured. And just to go back to our analogy before, you don't want your company the fate of your company to be the one that is out there to create the example for everybody else of what not to do. Right? That is the very last thing that anybody wants. So, very quickly, what do? We put processes in place to prevent bad things from happening, controls, permissions, a governance plan that takes, you know, some of the controls out of the hands of the users and puts it in the hands of people that know what they should be doing to make sure that bad things don't happen, but knowing that they will, when they do, we need to find them quickly, track them, respond and resolve, and then feed that back into our life cycle so that we know from a risk management life cycle, cradle to grave, we have a strategy that is continuously evolving over time, that is feeding that learning from that mistake or that person that did the wrong thing at the wrong time back into our prevention strategies. And so all the time, our systems are becoming stronger and more secure, and that policy is evolving along with them. This is not a one-stop shop. And so here is what the approach looks like, how to take control and be a part of the process. The first thing is to understand where you are today. Right? If you don't know where you are today, then it's very hard to discern what kinds of improvements need to happen. And so you need to analyze your as-is environment from a compliance perspective to see who can do what kinds of content is in our environment, and how are we putting controls in place to make that better. You need to identify areas of non-compliance. You need to make sure that you prioritize those from a business perspective. Quick example. If you do an analysis of your SharePoint environment and you find that you have 100,000 documents with social security numbers sitting inside of SharePoint, is that a privacy breach? Not necessarily, right? We know that SharePoint is used to hold sensitive data. So it's all about the context, right? It's all about how old is that information, who can access it, what have they done with it, and what's happened to that information. And if those documents are sitting out there unused and old and unnecessary, then you can decide, well, we're gonna move them out of our SharePoint environment because it's probably not a good idea for them to be sitting there unprotected, but that is not a breach. That's actually preventing a breach from happening with sensitive data that's there. So you have to prioritize what to fix, when, where, why, and how. Rediagram your security boundaries and those policies to make them enforceable. Architect that in through your governance plan and compliance policies, and then undertake migration. So oftentimes, I hear companies talking, and even in the context of this conference, everybody's talking about migrating to SharePoint 2013 at some point, right? Whether it's from 2010 to 2013 or 2007 to 2013, there is no better time to clean up your house than when you're getting ready to move, right? So just like when you're getting ready to move from one house to another, one apartment to another, you don't just throw everything in the box and move it. Right? You look around and you see, what should be thrown out? What do I not have to take with me? What should I fix? Compliance and migration go hand in hand. Great opportunity to get your act together. And then once you move to that new system, your governance plan can help you maintain control on a go-forward basis, so you improve and you stay in a better place. And one of the things that is really important is to measure and have metrics in place to make sure that once you get compliant, you can stay compliant. And I'll tell you one thing that lawyers and business owners like is pretty pictures, right? So make sure that you can see where you are today, where you have problems, and keep track over time of progress and improvements and where you get better and where you get worse, so that you can understand where you have areas of risk in your business. And more importantly than where you have areas of risk, who gets it? Who's doing it right? And what's the difference between what they understand? Because to go back to those privacy officers that have very few resources and very little staff, but are highly influential within your business, those folks can benefit from information that will allow them to understand where they need to point training to, or what kinds of small improvements they can make that will have a large improvement in your compliance posture. And so being able to track who gets it and who doesn't is going to be very helpful in improving your compliance posture as you go forward. So Jeremy, can you talk a little bit more about how this applies in terms of deploying solutions?
Sure. So Dan has kind of introduced that concept of privacy and compliance and risk there. The reality is that the cloud, as we mentioned, is another area of extreme risk for an organization. And one of the reasons is the security aspect of the cloud and that permutation. Now, the consumer market is always a bit ahead of the large enterprise organizations in that sense that we've been using the cloud as consumers for a long time. I would hazard a bet that you probably tick about 4 or 5 of those logos at a minimum of cloud services that you would use on a day-to-day basis. Now, that means that you've decided to take on that risk and trust that security of that cloud service. And what we're seeing with enterprise customers now is that this is definitely a reality that's happening, especially with things like with Microsoft, with Office 365, and especially with SharePoint Online. Now, what that means, though, is that there's been that traditional push of systems where it may have started off as access databases sitting under people's desks to moving to, okay, we're going to put that in a server room, in a data center within my own office. And then we've stepped up to a centralized data center, maybe in a geographic region for each of your offices to share. And this is really where the cloud has stepped in and become that next evolution of where technology and where your information sits. Now, the risk is pretty scary at each one of those levels. And obviously, there's different amounts of risk and different amounts of trust depending on who's looking after and securing that technology where it's hosted. And to flip that pivot on its head a bit, there's also different approaches to the cloud when it comes to SharePoint. So I borrowed this graph from the book below there, where essentially if I'm on-premises, as an IT pro, and there was a lot of people who put their hands up there, you're responsible for a lot of things within that system. When you're running SharePoint, you have to take care of a lot of areas of managing that IT aspect. As you move up the stack and you start looking at infrastructure as a service with Windows Azure or Amazon and other platforms out there, those layers of responsibility got struck to strip away from you. And that element of control that you did have is not there now. So you have to do your due diligence on understanding that trust aspect of you not being in control of those areas. That steps up again when we start looking at platform as a service. And it steps up even further when we start looking at things like software as a service in the likes of Exchange Online and SharePoint Online and Link Online as part of that Office 365 offering. What we're finding with organizations is that control, that element of risk increases from the perception of the security officers that Dana mentioned earlier on. And so you have to have these discussions in trying to encourage that trust is there and that they are doing probably more than what we did internally if we were running this on-premises, and to educate your business in that means. And Microsoft are reacting very, very quickly as well. They focus extremely hard on the federal government areas, being able to naturally go in there and trust Microsoft to do the right thing. And the education market now is a core vertical for Office 365 customers as well. Microsoft are working very, very hard to ensure that trust is there. Now, it is an issue, and obviously there's a lot of layers of trust associated there. But it's very important to educate your business with the balance and to explain what the risk is currently now on-premises and what the risk is if you did move to the cloud. So why would you want to move to the cloud is a big driver, and there's been a lot of this at the conference this week, so I'm just going to kind of spin these up and pick on one specifically, which is around the SLAs. So one of the biggest things we hear from a service level agreement aspect with Office 365 is that the SLAs, which are narrowing down, and every 6 months to a year they seem to adjust the figures. But what I'm talking about is from a disaster recovery scenario or a date downtime of that service to your organization, those figures are aggressively getting shorter and shorter. When we started out with Office 365 or even BPOSD, the original times for recovering an entire site collection was 48 hours. That's now down to 24 hours now on a standard offering. And I would hazard a bet that will get reduced again as we see some of the new service offerings come through with the next major release of Office 365. Next year. So please bear that in mind, that there are a lot of very strong reasons to move your business into the cloud from that perspective, but it's key to understand that trust element of, from a compliance and a governance perspective, of why you shouldn't kind of fear the cloud as much, as long as you understand the risk and the comparison to what it is on-premise. And I just want to really push that point home, is that on-premise you still have a lot of those risks. How much do you actually trust your internal guys inside that organization and the access security of your building or the data center you're currently using compared to that cloud scenario? And we're seeing a lot more large enterprises now limit that risk issue there around the trust. But there are also some other reasons of why not to move to the cloud. Now, these are the things that in some of the sessions this week they've talked about. When we look at integrating with other internal systems, so if we have SharePoint Online and Exchange Online switched on in Office 365, how do I reach back down into those other systems I have to integrate with? Maybe I do have an external records management system down here or a customer relationship management system on premises. There are lots of different scenarios now where you can actually integrate those internal systems back or sorry, up to Office 365, especially with things like the business connectivity services. So please, when you look at the whole service you're offering, that's what you need to take into account. And then some of the things more relevant to some of the Australian markets that we've been talking to, but are also relevant here in the US as well, is that concept of data sovereignty. Where is my information being stored? If I am in Australia and I have content that's stored in SharePoint Online, it's actually being stored outside of the country. Now, from a compliance and privacy perspective, companies can still see that as a big risk when it comes to the cloud. Now, there are spinning up a lot more data centers around the world now to get around that data sovereignty issue. But please bear that in mind, that that is one of the biggest issues that we're seeing with the cloud outside of that general security concern, is that where is that data physically located with around the globe? And then obviously, other areas, the usability. In the keynote, they showed that they had Office 365 running in Amsterdam, and we're across the pond in Las Vegas accessing Office 365. That low latency aspect there, or the distance there, didn't show a performance grade degradation. But there's definitely places I've been in the world where when I've accessed SharePoint Online, you can see a physical slowness across that. So you do need to evaluate Office 365 from that perspective and make sure that you're pushing that from and understanding where your organization's offices are and how that impacts your user experience as a user on the organization. So how do we actually get control? This is the slides that myself and Dan Holmer presented a few times, and I'm sure if you've been in Dan's sessions this week, he's covered this in more detail. But I just want to put this into perspective from a cloud perspective, which is that when we're looking at this and we're looking at putting controls around SharePoint, as an IT pro in the room and as a SharePoint architect, if I sliced my arm off here and you'd look, you'd probably see all this stuff spewing out in that kind of logical architecture model, where I think in terms of farms, web applications, site collections, and content databases in that way. And we all know that there's different things that we can set up and tick on to control, whether it be defining security at different levels. But what about that scenario where I'm saying, I don't want these particular documents inside SharePoint? The only places I can block those documents is at that web application level. Now, if I'm in SharePoint Online, I don't get that ability to control the web application, web configs for certain things at that control level. And if I animate this out, you'll see there's other things that we can't do. Now, if you go into the control panel in SharePoint Online, you will start to see some of these things appearing in different ways now. But when you're looking at your on-premises scenario and you're comparing that to move maybe to the cloud, you need to understand the controls that you have in place. Can you actually flick those things on in SharePoint Online? Because essentially, the reality is that you can only really do inside that bucket at the site collection level. And this is one of the biggest challenges we're seeing at the moment. And Microsoft are reacting. They're going to a 3-month service lifecycle, was announced in the keynote. So you'll be seeing a lot more of these switches coming on within the admin control panel. But for now, you just need to be aware from a cloud perspective, those controls may not be there. The other thing we see is this concept of workloads and where they sit. So a typical organization we talk to, whether they're small or large, will have this type of thing. They'll jump in with their team sites, collaborating per department. They'll have that social hub switched on and leveraging my sites and the activity feeds. And they'll have a static, not so regularly updated intranet, which is for the whole organization. And these typically things will be in their own web applications, and they'll have individual site collections. So that when a new department comes on board, they're introduced as another site collection isolated in their own content database. Now, as we start to grow, as your company evolves over time in adopting SharePoint, what you can actually be able to see is that we may decide that certain workloads get introduced in what we call that hybrid model, where some things are left on-premises and some things are moved into the cloud. So in this example here, the extranet is a really simple one that you can spin up in Office 365 very, very quickly and therefore have people internally of your organization accessing it, but also invite people external of your organization as well very, very quickly in Office 365. If you try to spin up an extranet internally on-premises, you've got to start dealing with fighting about your firewalls, getting those exposed. You've got to fight about your Active Directory controls as well. So extranet is a very natural one that we see being moved in there. But then, as we talk about that, we need to start thinking about how we share those services between the cloud and our on-premises environment. And typically what we see is a services farm splitting and sharing between the Office 365 and the on-premise environment. And then the other things we start to see are this introduction of workloads that maybe are more business critical. They might have an isolated farm which has higher SLAs than that standard farm that you have for your traditional workloads. And expanding that again, what we might see is that introduction of a line of business system, like Project Server might sit on its own farm rather than being sitting on that individual farm. And likewise, that'll grow out again. Now, the reason I show this is because this makes your workloads portable. I can start to move those individual site collections between on-premises and the cloud a lot more flexible than what I could do if it was all bunched on one farm in one site collection on one web application. I can also decide that, right, well, we've got 2013 now, guys. I can upgrade that central farm there to 2013 and then focus on my apps farm and my line of business farm, whatever those customizations are, at a later date. Rather than having everything bunched together and going, well, we can't upgrade to 2013 because we've got some third-party tool sitting in the apps farm that's blocking it. So although this is a very extreme case, and obviously this is painting the picture for a very, very large organization, what I would recommend is to start with the end in mind. So maybe you do only have the capability to run one farm, but think about your logical architecture and splitting up your workloads so that you can get to that end state of being very, very flexible with upgrading to 2013, but more importantly, be able to move to that cloud area. So what kind of things have we got that we can help there, Dana?
Well, Jeremy mentioned that one of the areas that's evaluating cloud sort of most rapidly really is in the government sector. So we hear, though, all the time from security officers that there's a concern about moving to the cloud because of sensitive data. So one of the programs that we put in place with Microsoft Worldwide Public Sector is this idea of, it's not a question really of if you're going to go to the cloud, but rather what you're going to put in the cloud. And when you frame the conversation in that way, you get a lot more buy-in typically from folks that have those concerns. So the idea is to do that analysis of your as-is environment to identify where that sensitive data lives in your SharePoint system, and then make decisions about what kind of information do we want to put in the cloud? What information are we comfortable moving there? So that, again, maybe a hybrid environment is more appropriate for some kinds of organizations depending on the data that they control within their SharePoint environment. So again, it comes back to that assessment of your as-is environment and the content within it, and determine how to separate that data, whether it's through reporting and data classification, and then further to design that information architecture that allows you to make sure that your on-premise environment is separated or connected appropriately to the cloud so that you prevent data that you don't want in the cloud from being in the cloud. And for some folks, you know, they may be all in and say we're moving everything to the cloud. I haven't heard that a lot, and I don't think that will happen a lot. I think most of the customers that we work with will move to more of a hybrid approach where they say some of our data and some of our systems are always going to live on the ground. And other information that we may be less concerned about, maybe it's external collaboration with business partners or sort of just my sites or those kinds of things, well, those will allow up in the cloud, but we want to keep our critical systems on premise. So how do we separate the data and make sure it doesn't get mixed together? And then determine, again, how are we going to move the data where we want it to be and keep it from being where we don't want it to be? And this kind of approach, again, allows your security officers, those compliance folks, to be a little bit more comfortable in the conversation rather than the leading with no. Because that, again, is that sort of typical posture of a security officer. When they get a question, the default answer is no. No, you can't do that. No, you can't do that. No, I'm turning this off. And that's not the conversation that you want to be in. You want to be in one where you're engaging them from the beginning and making them a part of the decision. So Jeremy, can you talk a little bit about how we use SharePoint as a service?
So we're kind of folding this all in together now. What we want to focus on is how we provide this to that business user so it's transparent, whether they're on-premise or in the cloud. So typically with any system, whether it happens in a water cooler, whether it's via email or a help desk, or it's a phone call, what happens is a user wants something. And he's going to put in and fill in a request. There might be some executives that go through an approval process. And then typically either the IT admin has to flick some switches and configure some things, or in the case of an automated system, it's done for you on their behalf. What we see from a policy perspective when we're configuring these things is that on premises, there's certain things when you create site collections that get flicked on. So from a business critical system, we start to see that backup is higher in terms of an aggressive 1 hour backup over non-business critical data or sensitive data, depending on that balance. And that maybe where the data is resided from a remote blob storage place is externalized somewhere else. And likewise, when we talk about compliance, from an archiving perspective, maybe that business critical data we have to store for 7 years, whereas the non-business critical data, maybe we only store it for 1 year. And again, every time I introduce a new site collection or a new workload, we have to make these decisions. So when we talked about defining those policies in the first section, these are the kind of things we have to make sure we switch on. So if we can do this in an automated way, it's very, very important. Now, how do we get this to the business? Well, essentially, we have this concept of regulated users or non-regulated users. And so, Dana, what's the difference there from a compliance perspective?
Right. So you may be able to simply divide the population of users in your company from those that are typically managing protected information from those that are not. And so you may have different SLAs and different compliance requirements attached to regulated users that whose job it is to manage confidential information versus your general user population. You know, those folks in administration or operations or folks that are just kind of using SharePoint to just have a collaboration portal and intranet site.
And so with that aspect, what we tend to see in organizations is that businesses offer those services as bulk packages. So the business user doesn't have to understand how these things are configured and what things are switched on and switched off within SharePoint. And they get to choose almost like on a shopping list. And maybe depending on who you are within the organization, you may not see some of these services. So you can see in this example, the regulated users, when they ask for new site collections, have to have a site collection which is configured with 7 years worth of archiving and storing of that content. Whereas the non-secure users or the non-regulated users, maybe they have different offerings to those people. And under the hood, what we see organizations doing, as well as things like switching on whether Section 508 is required or not, is also whether maybe this is on-premises or in the cloud. And again, this is transparent to the user. They ask for a site, and these decisions are made for them. And this is really where we see those policies coming into play, where that hybrid scenario starts to become an advantage. Likewise, you can see as another example, just to pick one out there, is that quota aspect. Maybe those regulated users, because they are deemed to be using a lot of content, will have 100 gig quotas, whereas the non-secure, unregulated users maybe only have 10 gig of storage. And this is how we're focusing on, well, seeing that customers are using those service offerings. And in essence of time, what we see here is that we can then start targeting departments as well with particular workloads. So maybe we know the sales team have to create site collections for each customer. We can provide an offering there that we shrink wrap that bundle for them in a way that they put a request in and we create that site collection with that particular template, with that particular security, and we start to block things like PII and also from a lease perspective, state that maybe you can only have this site for 2 years and then we're going to reach out to you and say, well, you've had this site for 2 years now, what would you like to do with it? Maybe it's time to archive it off. So again, it's putting those controls and shrink wrapping in the way that you understand how your business is using SharePoint and you understand those departments in terms of their context of how they're leveraging it. And it's not just about the provisioning of these sites. One of the biggest things that we're hearing now once people have adopted SharePoint for 4 or 5 years is the IT guys don't know what they can get rid of because they don't know who owns that content. That's not only a risk for IT from a storage concern, it's a risk from a compliance concern as well. If there is a data breach in that content, who do I run to ask them what you can do with that content? So it's very important at all stages through the life cycle of the site collection that you understand who is accountable for it. And one thing I would recommend is don't throw them in the site collection admin box and don't throw them necessarily in the site owners group because that gives them a lot of elevated controls that you may not want them to have. What we recommend you doing is either having an Excel spreadsheet or a SharePoint list, or maybe you build a system or look at a third-party product that can start to track and measure the accountability of those site collections in a way where you're not granting them those elevated permissions. And having those automated processes in here means that you can start allocating and chasing them when their lease runs out. Maybe no one's been using the site for a year. You can reach out to them and go, no one's accessed this content for a year. It's time to archive that off. Therefore, reducing your storage, reducing your risk profile and allowing you to get a bit of a, more of a control over those site collections within your organization. So Dana, just to wrap up, from the continuous improvement stuff, what would you say would be the next steps that these guys can take home?
Well, I think it's really important to remember that you have to start with where you are. And this is not to suggest that where you are right now is garbage, but rather that you don't know, right? So you don't know what you don't know. And just remember that, just like I want you to remember the iceberg, remember that when you move anywhere, you have an opportunity. And again, if it's moving from your on-premise environment to the cloud or your SharePoint 2010 environment to 2013, if you build in this kind of analysis, which is already part of an ongoing project, and you bring in the right stakeholders, you have a great opportunity to land on the other side of the rainbow and find a pot of gold. So not lucky charms, but you know, here is a real thing you can put in place in your business that you can go back and do tomorrow, or at least get the conversation started, that will help put that continuous improvement in place for, you know, not only your SharePoint environment, but for the company as a whole. And when you elevate this conversation to the business, to these compliance officers, again, this is a great opportunity to show value for the business, to tap into that additional funding source, and to have a different kind of appreciation, I think, for SharePoint within your company as well.
And then there was... And then from the takeaway aspect, I guess, as we've mentioned right near the beginning, we have to start thinking about who those stakeholders are within the organization. And to Dana's point, it's not just about the SharePoint guys. You've got to go and make sure you understand who are the people that are concerned with the compliance, risk, and privacy, and get those people involved in this early on. And to engage that leadership, get that sponsorship at that high level to make sure that you are going to get that drive and that push from a success factor. And, excuse me, to make sure that those policies that you create and you define, please make sure that they are enforceable, they are governable, because if they aren't, your governance system is going to fail. And lastly, please make sure that when you're integrating those policies with other systems, that you go and talk to those people. So when we start getting those overlaps with other systems like Exchange from an Office 365 perspective and even on-premises, that you are starting to share notes and compare governance plans to make sure that you are learning from other systems within your organization. So just to wrap it up, we have a lot more resources on avpoint.com that tackle this in a lot more detail. And we have covered a lot today. A governance white paper was released on Monday, which is available in the resource section. And there are some compliance white papers there also. If you do have other questions, please feel free to come and visit us at our booth. If you haven't already seen, we are giving away a Ducati bike. The ticket is inside your bag. You will need to get that there pretty quickly before we do the draw this afternoon. Myself and Dana will be available for the rest of the afternoon. If you do have any questions, please come to our booth, and we'd love to hear some of the stories and some of the pains you're feeling within your organization and how we can help from that perspective. So with that, thank you very much, and I hope you've had a good conference, and we look forward to seeing you at the draw at 2 p.m. today for